Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Welcome to the Side Action Podcast. I'm not going to say the episode number, by the way. We're just going to say the date is February 5th. That's when we're taping, since we've gotten so many episodes in.
Yeah.
I am Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And I am Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow the podcast at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So, any exciting things happen over the weekend?
Well, I mean, February 5th, we go back to the date there. I think we can all say a word of peace for the postmortem of the NFL football season.
Shed a tear.
It's over. It was really sad, and what a disappointing end, too.
Yeah, we'll go in detail later, but man, that was a disappointment. I mean, everybody was all excited for this great game, and then it was just the lowest scoring game in history, and halftime show was kind of bad, and I don't know. I think I got E. coli from the party I was at, to be honest with you.
Damn, ouch. So. I had a great weekend. Friday night, I went to a work party for one of our partner firms, was having a holiday party at headquarters. Mm-hmm. So I went there, got off keto, got off dry January. Kind of was culminating in this perfect event where I had a couple of beers and cocktails. So that was a great time. And then Saturday was chocked full of college basketball, and I had another fantastic Saturday. Lots of early morning unders, which cashed, and watched a little bit of the golf tournament. My Ricky Fowler ticket
paid off. I know you were sweating it out. You were texting me saying how he blew a 5-shot lead really fast on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday I was really sweating it out. There was one hole, I don't know if you caught it, on the 11th when he ended up in the water and dropped. And he turned around and talked to his caddy for like a minute and just totally nonchalantly didn't watch the ball. And it rolled back into the water. Oh. So we had like a 3 strokes he lost on that one green. God. He ended up making a 7 somehow on that hole, but then came back in the end and he cashed my 22-1 ticket. And it was
22-1. That's winning right there.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
Well, it wasn't too exciting. I had some interesting sort of pseudo drama. Personally, which, you know, everything's fine now, but I ended up going to a Super Bowl party, which was cool. Our buddy Artemis Prime, he invited me to, you know, Sarah's place. I think I told you about that.
Nice.
Sarah and Adam's place. Adam is a huge Patriots fan, which was unbeknownst to me.
That sounds rough.
But it was okay. I mean, I had money on the Patriots. I ended up obviously, we talked about it last week. I did hedge. I hedged the 2 units, so I won the $20 on them and also cashed the under. That was easy.
Yeah.
I didn't get the big payout for the Rams future or the Gurley MVP, but I finished the NFL season. I mean, man, I'm sad to see the NFL go. I keep winning money from the NFL.
I know it is going to be sad. I was looking back at my record, though. I mentioned before that I was up like 20 games, but somehow gave so many units back there in the playoffs. And it was kind of a lesson to myself that even though the season is winding down and you may think that you have so much more knowledge about a certain team or a sport or event, just because it's the end of the season doesn't mean that you should put more money on the games.
That's right. So. Stick to the budget. We talked about that. Yeah. So the other plug I'll make is we have our big Makers Mark event coming up this weekend, M&M Singles. So it'll be this Saturday at Cindy's, the rooftop bar at the Chicago Athletic Club, as I was talking to you about before the pod. We've already got over 90 people registered for this event.
Wow.
It's going to cap
fantastic.
At 125, so if you haven't registered, definitely do it. I put it out on my blog last week and on my various social media outlets, so it's going to be exciting.
Well, I hope that you guys feel that. For those of you out there who may be single in the Chicago area, you should definitely check it out. Free booze and a singles event. What can you lose?
Yeah, free booze. There's going to be free appetizers. They're going to have like a whiskey tasting section. We're going to do some fun things to get people mixed up talking to each other. And I'm really excited. I may even buy a new pair of jeans, Action.
Wow.
Off the dad jeans tilt.
You're going to go with some more fashion jeans?
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not going to go skinny jean, but I mean, I'm going to do something that's maybe a little bit more, who knows? I haven't decided yet.
Wow, we'll be on the lookout for those.
You'll see them. All right, well, let's go over this episode. We've got a little bit shorter episode than normal. We're going to talk about we'll talk about a little bit about legislative updates. It's really more about kind of action in Vegas for the Super Bowl and also other states. We'll go over a head-to-head from last week and then jump into the Super Bowl recap about various props and how the game went. Action's pulled some early lines already, or I should say futures, for the Super Bowl title for Super Bowl 54. That's a big look ahead, but that's, you can get some value early. Then we'll jump into college hoops, which is probably going to dominate a lot of our podcast going forward. And then we'll go over our metrics. We'll go over our look aheads and to figure out who we're going to bet on this week. And then we'll talk a little bit about the NBA. There's been some movement in the NBA, some trade talks and actual trades. And then just touch on the, what did you call it? The
first period overs.
The five. What is
Follow the Money Five.
Follow the Money Five. I should know that. I listen to these guys every day. The Follow the Money Five on the NHL first period overs. And then finally our head-to-head. So another full episode, though.
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right. The first legislative update is really about wagering in Vegas. You want to go over that?
Yeah, no, a lot of people were expecting another record Super Bowl handle this year, but it actually came in under the total value wagered in Nevada compared to last year's Super Bowl. The total announced was $145.9 million in Nevada, and the books held about $10.7 million out of that for a win percentage of 7.4. So it's the 11th straight year that sports books in Nevada have profited on the Super Bowl, which is an incredible run.
They win a lot of money on the props. We talked about that last week. It's kind of a group of sucker bets. When they started going over the sides, a lot of sharp bettors were on the Patriots and the under, so they kind of lost on that, but they recover with the props, so keep that in mind next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sharps, we'll talk about this later, the sharps had a huge day with all the no's and the unders. That low-scoring game was really massive for the sharps and the sports books alike. They're usually rooting for the same sides in most cases.
That's right.
So, on the contrary, the East Coast books had a pretty rough day. New Jersey was the only number that I was able to see out in the media, and they lost $4.5 million on the Super Bowl out of $34.8 million wagered. So, likely due to all the New England bettors over there on the East Coast.
Yeah, I heard there was a ton of betting in Rhode Island as well. They couldn't get anybody to take Ram money. But at the same time, I heard that they didn't really move the line above 3. So, it was one of these things that maybe they should adjust it. They're going to have to learn. They're not as savvy as Vegas, so they're going to learn their take their lumps and take some hits like this, and we'll see how it changes over time.
Yeah, I'm sure those sports books will bounce back in no time.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go over the recap from last week. The first game we had was Michigan. They were laying 3 points at Iowa. I was big on Michigan. Oh, they're gonna do this, and Iowa took care of business really easily, 74-59.
Yeah, I didn't get to see the game. I was disappointed there was no televisions on at headquarters, but I read about it and watched some highlights later, and Iowa really kind of took it to them, and my handicap came true. The Michigan offense really was bad. Iowa ended up winning this game 74-59, and it also stayed under the total, which we had in the Pick'em segment last week. But Michigan finished with just 38.5% effective field goal percentage. Oof. And their offensive rating was 81 points per 100 possessions, which is well below their season average. And you know, I've been talking about this for weeks, that Michigan offense has not been playing as well. They do still have a very good defense, but this offense is going to hold them back and makes me downgrade them going forward and certainly take them off of my national championship contenders list.
Interesting. Fallen far on the action index. I think that you're right. I think offense is obviously something they're going to have to address. Hopefully they'll get hot. They don't have that kind of player like Mo Wagner like they had last year who can just create. I know that they have the young guy,
Brazdakis,
Iggy, and they have some other players. But they're going to have to find something if they're going to, A, escape from the Big Ten and also push in March. So the next game we had, St. John's at Duke. We were targeting the total here. The total we had part put out was 161, which is really close to the total that that went out. I kind of got lucky, to be honest with you. I watched the first half of this game, and it was, I think the total was 84 at the half or 85, and I was like, man, these guys are just going up on the court, just a lot of big time shots and big dunks on both sides. But as I basically had put the handicap out there, Duke basically ran them out of the gym in the second half, so they didn't need all those free throws late, which are what pushed the number, and they won 91-61, so well under the total.
Yeah, Duke was definitely dominant in this game. They posted 61% field goal percentage shooting and 47% offensive rebounding rate, as well as 116 offensive rating. Zion Williamson was just beastly, 29 points, 6 rebounds, and 5 steals. You mentioned it. This is something that I've been keying on with my second half betting that I've been doing a lot more lately, is the second halves of these games. If you think it's going to be a blowout, it's unlikely that the scoring is going to be as high as it may have been in the first half, because that team who's leading by 20 or 30 points is going to slow the game down and just kill the clock. Nine times out of 10, if a game tends to be a blowout, the second half is way less scoring than the odds makers predict.
Right. Where conversely, though, if it's a close game, all those free throws just kind of push that total up. So,
yep, excellent point.
Gotta think about it. And that 47% rebounding rate, I just kind of wanted to put that in real terms. So that basically means that almost one out of every two shots, they were getting their own rebound.
Yeah, one out of every two misses, they rebound in the basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy.
Incredible, yeah.
Okay, and then the two head-to-head for the Super Bowl, you know, went my favor. Rams against the Patriots, we had 2.5. We graded it, which was really, the number didn't move. I mean, I was sitting there waiting for this to come down as long as possible. I did get 2 in my bet, actually.
Oh, nice, nice.
But at the same time, I mean, that took, I think that was like 2 o'clock on Sunday. The line just didn't move. So as we noted, it was kind of a stinker Super Bowl. The Patriots won 13-3. The handicap kind of worked out. It was just kind of a grudge match. They were just kind of running into the line a lot.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of creativity on either team's part, which was kind of surprising. And, you know, I guess I was lucky to get the cover in a way, because the Patriots didn't do that much, even though they had 400 yards of offense. They, you know, I don't know if you noted this. We were watching the game. Both teams only went in the red zone once in the game.
Yeah.
And that was the only touchdown drive, and that was that pass to Gronk. Otherwise, they didn't even really get that close to the red zone.
Yeah, I think it was really a masterpiece by both Coach Belichick and by the Rams defensive
coordinator, Wade Phillips.
Wade Phillips, yeah, they had masterful game plans, and they kept both of these offenses down. And really, it must be said, there were poor performances by both of the quarterbacks, too. Tom Brady, even though they won the game, did not play well.
He looked bad.
And Jared Goff was just terrible. I saw that Brandon Cooks replay over and over
wide
again,
open.
And he missed him. That would have put him up 7-3 and completely changed the game. So I just feel for us NFL fans, because we really missed out on what could have been the Saints and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Such a disappointment that we ended up with that trash of a game, and we were robbed, really. I really feel robbed.
Tell us how you really feel, Action.
About this game. It should have been New Orleans in that game, and I think that New Orleans could have beaten that Patriots team easily on Sunday.
It looks like they could have, for sure. Although, you know, who knows? I mean, it's hard to say. Obviously, the game went under. We had 56.5. And we'll talk about this in a minute about live wagering, but it was one of those things. This number didn't move that much either. It actually went down.
Yeah.
I got it at 55.5. I was waiting desperately for the public to bet this game up, and they wouldn't do it. So there was something out there. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, we've been spoiled the last couple of years for great Super Bowls, maybe the last 5 Super Bowls, really. The only one I can remember that was kind of crummy was that Denver-Seattle one, when Seattle's house, the Peyton Manning and the team. But yeah, the games have been really great, competitive in the fourth quarter. But for some reason, it just was a really close-to-the-vest game the entire game.
Yeah, great call by you on that under. I wish that I would have been there with you. As it was tanking in that first half, I was looking for an angle to live bet the over.
Sure.
And I finally got in at 43.5, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And little known to me, that had zero chance.
Chance? It was crazy.
I think I saw somewhere online that at some book it got down to as low as 13.5.
It was. It was 13.5. It was 13.5 until the field goal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the books dodged some serious bullets on some of those props. That there was a couple who had the prop for no touchdown scored in the game.
Yep.
Close to 1,000-1, I think I read in some places. That would have just burned all of the Nevada sports books and probably turned the game into a loser had it happened.
Sure, no question. Well, let's transition to some of these props. You kind of talked about the bet online, what happened with the national anthem, because Gladys Knight decided to do a double pump on the Brave.
Yeah, before the game even started, there was controversy on some of these props, and this is the exact reason why Nevada Gaming Commission doesn't let them post these props, is because they're hard to grade. I mean, saying Brave twice, and that went over about 149, and at first it looked like the under was going to be the winner because they had claimed that it would be graded at the end of the first Brave.
Right.
But then later on, there was so much controversy. Bet Online was one book. I'm sure there were more that just decided to come out and pay both sides.
Right. It was like they have to be specified when her mouth closes or something like that at the end. And, you know, it's so funny. I also heard there was tons of money on the coin flip.
Yes.
Like, crazy amount of money. Mm-hmm. And people lost, of course.
Oh yeah, the books won. People lay minus 105 on that constantly, which just befuddles me. Why you would ever lay minus 105 on a coin flip is just outrageous. I know there's some books that offer it at 102, and even that's a bad bet.
So. Right, 50-50 chance. You've got Edelman. He was 20-1 to win, and obviously he had a massive game. He had the 10 catch, 141 yards. He had an incredible game. He was turning the defense around like a top. He made Peters and Tlaib look really bad at times.
Yeah, he was really the only choice for MVP. I think he surpassed his yardage total in the first half and finished with 10 catches and 141 yards. And really, I don't think there was anyone else who could really have been considered. Maybe one of the defensive players for New England, but that would have been a stretch probably.
Well, I was thinking that Gilmore could have probably gotten it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had, and you kind of recount it, he had the interception. He actually had the forced fumble that went out of bounds.
Yep, on Anderson.
Some pass breakups. He played really well, but they also gave him opportunities because he was on Cooks the whole time. We had a pretty good game.
True, and they were jamming Cooks. He really kind of shut down Cooks, although he did get some catches in the second half. But that was really the defensive plays of the game, was shutting down Brandon Cooks, because without him, Goff just really struggled.
Right.
And I was listening to on VSiN, Lombardi was saying that the Rams really struggled after, and Jared Goff struggled after Kupp went out, because he was really the only receiver who was quick off the line and could get open quickly on those blitz plays.
Right. It's a safety valve, and I think that changed the offense. And then obviously we can talk a little bit about Gurley. We talked about it last week. We both thought he'd play better. And I am waiting right now for them to basically make the announcement that he's going under the knife, because there's no way he's healthy. It's a joke. He got 11 touches in the game. There is no way that he's healthy. You're not going to have C.J. Anderson. Now, he only got 9 carries or something, but I mean, ultimately, come on, man. I was watching the game, and I was like, come on, give him the ball. Throw him the ball. And they just didn't do it, and that just eliminates like that entire offense, that stretch run, which they couldn't get established. Basically, Goff needs a play-action pass to complete it, and they couldn't even establish that because they had no running game.
Yeah, and C.J. Anderson wasn't really scaring anybody either.
No.
I'm going to be super interested to see what comes out of this whole mess, because people aren't going to drop it. I mean, there are going to be questions asked what was wrong with him and what's going on with Gurley, because they can't sit around and claim that it was just for poor performance. It just doesn't make any sense. He's the best running back in the league.
They could find them. I mean, they could find him. I don't know if they take away a draft pick or something. There are rules, you know, you have to disclose injuries, and, you know, I don't think they did, but, you know, McVay took it and he said, okay, it was my fault. I got schooled today, which he did.
Yep.
But at the same time, I don't know, it's just kind of sad at the same, because they had such a great season. A couple of things I wanted to note, that so there were a ton of props, as we talked about. One of the props was to hit the Rams scoring exactly 3 points.
Yeah.
And on VSiN, they reported a couple different bets, but roughly around 400-1 that paid. So there were a couple different guys that made over $100,000 on that bet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an insane total. I mean, 3 points is unheard of, but.
I was listening at one of the books, I think it was the Westgate, one of the older guys who was savvy with the props knew that in years past, some of the sharps played that exact prop at about 100-1.
Mm-hmm.
So he purposefully set that line for both teams at 80-1, just so that the sharps would go to other books and lay it. And obviously some of them found it at 400-1. I think it was the Westgate that had to pay that out, 100K.
Ouch.
So.
You know, the only ones that the props that actually went over were Edelman, Gronk actually ended up having a good game, and Cooks. Other than that, everything went under. So the nose won out, like we said. I'm not sure where Michelle's number was, but he definitely got the touchdown.
Yeah, Sony Michel went over, I think, on most of his props.
Okay.
At least the rushing props. I don't think he got a reception in the game.
No.
But you're right. Those three Patriots players were the only ones that went over their props.
Right.
Every other no cashed. Every player cashed on the no touchdown scored, except for Michelle.
Right.
And then tons of players going under, too. Brady and Goff went under on passing yards, too.
Mm-hmm. So you had good calls. You had Philip Dorsett and James Devlin. They were so you won those games. You won all those bets.
James Devlin didn't even sniff the ball. He had some great blocks, though.
Yeah, and he was out. He was actually split out wide once, I think, when maybe Gronk caught that big pass or something. But, yeah, a little deceptive. Look out, Devlin's in the flat. They actually showed, I don't know if you watched it, I was watching kind of the breakdown of the game the next day, and they showed that on that drive when Gronk had that big play, they ran the exact same play three different times. Wow. It just was a little bit different look. And the first time it was Edelman running an option route. The next time they hit somebody in the flat, it was Hogan. And then they hit Gronk for the big play. Apparently, they just, they couldn't stop that play.
Interesting.
And then your no score in the first 5:30. I was talking about that. That was totally easy money, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very easy. I wish I would have had the whole quarter or the whole half for that matter. It didn't get there, but it was crazy how low scoring it was. And yet another Super Bowl where the Patriots don't score in the first quarter.
They didn't. They missed the field goal. Yeah. That was weird. Crazy. What's his name? Gaskowski is really money, and he just shanked that thing.
Yeah, and not only did I have a live bet on the over in the first end of the first half, but going into halftime, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, Belichick and McVay are both going to make great halftime adjustments. Mm-hmm. They're going to come out, and there's going to be some early scoring in the third quarter, so I laid a pretty big bet on the third quarter total to go over, which obviously that ended up at 0-2 and lost that one. But some bad calls on the scoring on my part.
Mm-hmm. It's really curious, to be honest with you. I think that the takeaways for me from the game were, well, obviously Belichick's the master, six titles and nine Super Bowls. But, you know, this guy, I was talking about it last week, Flores, who ends up getting hired by Miami as their head coach. He really brought it. He was bringing key blitzes. He was obviously confusing Goff, which isn't that hard. But he went to a cover zero on that key play where the interception was there. He brought the pressure, and it worked. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, that's not the only way to beat the Rams, but they clearly neutralized that offense completely. And obviously, if Gurley isn't healthy, that's one thing. But it seems like they're maybe got a little exposed.
Yeah, and McVay was so stubborn that he just was reluctant to change the game plan at all or try anything different. They had some success on some of their passing downs, and then they just didn't go back to it for whatever reason, and they couldn't move the ball. And you're right, Flores really kind of took it to him.
That's right. Well, what can you say? Well, better luck next year for the Rams. Maybe they'll be back if they can keep their roster together. So let's take a look at the futures for the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 54, next year's Super Bowl. You've got the Rams in New England at plus 700, which kind of makes sense. They're right there. Mm-hmm. But the Chargers creep in there with Kansas City at plus 800. You got the Colts and the Saints at plus 1,000. And then my Bears at plus 1,300, which you said is way too high or way too low.
Right? I definitely don't have faith in Trubisky to take that line.
Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh at plus 1,600, Green Bay at plus 1,800, and then Miami, Dallas, and Philly at plus 2,000. Down the chain, you got Atlanta, Baltimore, and Cleveland at plus 3,000, Houston, Seattle plus 4,000. I don't know, Jimmy G in San Francisco at plus 4,500.
Intriguing.
I don't know. But at the very bottom, you got Miami. Is that plus 30,000?
Yeah, it sure is.
Wow.
I'm not sure how accurate some of these are. You know, obviously, different books are going to be wide ranging. I've seen the Colts as high or as low as 1,500 in some places. And I'm sure that number on Miami is a little out of whack if you look at other places.
I know you're not going to put any money down. You don't like to tie up your money for a year. Mm-hmm. But which of these do you think have some value at a quick glance?
Well, I'd say Kansas City right off the bat. I mean, that team was clearly the best offense in the league this year, and Patrick Mahomes is going to get a whole other offseason to get in tune with Andy Reid and that coaching staff. And even without Kareem Hunt, I think they showed that they could fill that void at running back with other players, and that Chiefs team is going to be very good again next year. I would also look at the Indianapolis Colts. Probably would shop around, though, and find a better number than that 10-1. I think that if you could find them in the 15-20-1 range, there's value there too with that offensive line. They're just going to be great next
year. Right. The two values I see here are Green Bay, actually, plus 1,800. I don't love their choice in the higher, but they've got to be better than they've been. You've got Aaron Rodgers. You got to figure he's going to try to bring it back, and he's down the way. And I kind of like Seattle at plus 4,000 if this is true. They were a good team, a young team on the rise. you know, they didn't quite have it in that game against Dallas in the playoff, but I mean, Russell Wilson's still young. He's in his prime, and that defense was legit. So, you know, I'm not going to put the money down, but it's something to think about.
You're not buying into the Baker Mayfield hype and going with the Browns?
I actually, if I would pick, if there's a way to pick a future on them making the playoffs, I would do it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know about winning the Super Bowl. And that's a big stretch for me.
Yeah, that would be intriguing. I'm sure some numbers like that will be coming out soon. I'm sure you'll be seeing division odds at some point in the next few weeks, too.
I mean, they could win that division. You never know. All right, well, let's transition to college hoops now. We had tons of different things happen. You are killing it on the unders, especially the first half unders. Why don't you go over that?
Yeah, another great weekend. Early games, that 12 noon Eastern start time is really just killing the unders, especially in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some news pop up that overall in college basketball this season, unders are actually killing the overs. 51.8% of games have stayed under, and 53.7% of non-overtime games have stayed under this year. So I'm sure that's just teeter-totter going one way, like you always talk about.
Yeah.
Water finds its level.
It does.
And maybe coming back at some point, especially when those odds makers start to adjust. But right now, the unders have been hot.
I wonder what's the explanation for that. I mean, maybe people love to bet the overs, so maybe it's just adjustment.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's going against public bias. Public loves the overs, and so the bookmakers know that, and they have to put those totals out a little bit higher, especially on some of your popular teams like Duke. Over my shoulder right now. I've been consistently in the 150s, 160s, and they've gone like four games over the total this year, and those totals still keep coming out at that level, and I think that's part of the reason. Also, the referees stop calling all the whistles. Like,
sure,
they focus on that early in the season, the pace and space rules. And that goes by the wayside once conference play starts.
Yeah, Big 12, they put those whistles in their pockets for sure. All right, you got your Indiana Hoosiers, man. We buried them last week on the podcast, but they came out and they somehow beat Michigan State. How did that happen?
Yeah, totally out of the blue. Seven games in a row they had lost and going on the road to Michigan State, and they really pulled a rabbit out of their hat. 15-point underdogs, and they won plus 900 on the money line.
That's awesome.
And what was more astounding is their best player, Juwan Morgan, went out in the first 8 minutes of the game with a shoulder injury and didn't return. Devontae Green, the point guard, did come back from a suspension, and I think that really changed the team a little bit. He got them more into their offensive flow. And Deron Davis came back on the inside too, which helps out that three-point shooting, gives them a little more space, and he's such a great and willing passer.
So, are you buying your Hoosiers now?
I'm going to watch them a little bit. I think that their defense was a little bit better this weekend too. I'm going to be looking at some more unders with them, but I'm not going to be going all in on playing them on the sides, but we'll be looking at spots.
Okay. Talked about some of the unders. Some other ones you had, your Purdue Boilermakers. I mean, they're my squad right now, by the way. I've been pumping them up way before you were, and they just keep winning. They're 3-0 again this last couple weeks here.
Yeah, Sunday morning, those three games, Purdue, Minnesota, Wake Forest, Clemson, and Georgetown, Nova, all had first half unders, and I just love those spots. 11 a.m. here at Central Time, first half under is an automatic play for me for the most part.
Yeah, and they keep covering too. So you've kind of noted that one of the key factors is, I'm not going to call him my guy, but Nojel Eastern, who's from Evanston.
He went
to school with my daughter, actually, up in Evanston Township. And I'd like to say I coached against this kid and fam when he was a middle schooler, but he was more like a gun for hire. He came in and beat us in a big semifinal game in the playoffs in that league. But this kid's a really good defensive player, struggled at the foul line, but I guess he's picking it up now.
Yeah, I hope you didn't teach him how to shoot free throws, because
no, I did not.
Early this season, he was 11 out of 27, 40% from the line. And this is really the most remarkable thing about this Purdue team is in the last six games, which corresponds with this win streak, starting at that road win in Wisconsin, he's surging 29 out of 35 and 83% from the free throw line.
That's incredible.
Just night and day for this kid. And it's really changed the fortunes of this Purdue team, because it allows Painter to keep him on the floor in the end of games.
That's right.
And he's an incredible defender and even better rebounder.
Yeah, he's a big kid and he can really rebound. And he's I'm excited to see that he's improved. improving. So that bodes well for them down the stretch.
I tell you what, look out for this Boiler team. And they're really set up to win this Big Ten, too. Mm-hmm. Michigan and Michigan State play each other twice down the stretch. Mm-hmm. And Purdue has the easier of the three schedules.
And Purdue's undefeated at home right now in the mm-hmm. Big Ten. So, well, Nebraska, we've been talking about them. I kept putting them on my underrated list, but we can't do that anymore. They just keep losing. They lost to Illinois. And now they've lost their last five straight against the spread.
Yeah, that's right. Five in a row, straight up, and ATS. And they are really on a slide.
Ouch. You said Isaac Copeland got hurt for them, so that may be one of the factors. But
yeah, they since Copeland went out, their scoring has actually dipped tremendously. 74 was their average on the season, and now it's down to 62 points per game. And he is confirmed now to be out with an ACL tear.
Ouch. One of the things I noted is that, you know, the thing about college basketball, and I got to get over it. I got to figure out angles like you do, like first half unders or something that's different than sides, because I was so used to doing that in the NFL. These kids are just so unpredictable. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, the Hoosiers beat Sparty. Arkansas beat LSU. That was a pretty big upset. West Virginia beat Oklahoma. West Virginia's been terrible all year.
Yeah.
And then Illinois over Nebraska, and then not to mention, obviously, Iowa is a really good team, and they beat Michigan. But Bowling Green beat Buffalo in the MAC. Buffalo's been a top 20 team all year, and they beat them 92-88. So you just got to watch it when you pick your spots. I did see that spot with Bowling Green. Bowling Green's are actually a pretty good ball club.
Yeah, definitely.
So I did see that was kind of a stay away, just kind of from a betting perspective, but I didn't think they were actually going to pull off the upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we touched on it last week, but Kansas got upset a couple of times. They've lost three in a row now on the road and have another huge road game tonight with Kansas State.
I bet on that game. I think you might have put it out, but I bet on Kansas State. I think they're going to win. Of course, that's a batter for the Sunflower State. I mean, come on.
Yeah, huge, huge game in the Big 12. Kansas is trying to keep that reign alive with the 12 straight titles.
12 or 13 straight,
This game is a big one in that Big 12 title race.
That's right. Well, let's go over our various kind of identifiers, metrics here. I've got the overrated teams right now. I keep putting Marquette on here, even though they keep covering. They are 10 in the AP, but 26th in KenPom. They are getting better in KenPom. Florida State is 22nd in the AP, but 28th in KenPom. I think that's a definitely overrated team. Cincinnati kind of is right in between. They were underrated last week, now overrated. They got in the top 25, which is great, but their numbers dropped in KenPom to 29, so they're right on the verge. The underrated teams, I'm still going to promote Auburn. Don't like Bruce Pearl at all, but they should be better ranked. They're 13th in KenPom, but 28th when you look at the AP. I love this Baylor team. Baylor is basically top 25 in KenPom. They're 30th. They're rising with a bullet in the AP. And the Mississippi State, they're just like Cincinnati. They're kind of flexing back and forth between overrated and underrated. They're 23rd in KenPom right now, and they're 27th in the AP. So they have a big game against Kentucky that we'll talk about later.
Yep. I think you're spot on with Florida State there on the overrated line. That's just a team that I just can't get behind. Mm-hmm. Very poor shooting team and just not very disciplined. So I'm with you. And we talk about Marquette every week. I agree with you there, too. Very overrated with Marcus Howard.
Against the Spartans. You got something else?
If you shut down Marcus Howard, they're going to be easy to beat.
Exactly. And we'll see. They play Villanova this week. That's a big game. So a couple of just wanted to kind of go after the against the spreads now. Washington, Ridgeway can love this. They're my darlings. They're 6-0 against the spread lately. They play Arizona coming up here. You're noting that they're playing a zone defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's making it
work.
Yeah,
Mike Hopkins came over from Syracuse, and he brought the zone with him, which is giving every one of their Pac-12 opponents fits. I don't think anyone's seen a zone in the Pac-12 in quite a while. So
it's effective. That matchup zone works, and they are just getting it done. Marquette's 5-0, as we mentioned. Purdue is 7-1, their last eight. I love that. Kentucky's 6-1. And Nevada and Villanova are 5-1 against the spread both. So these are the teams I'm targeting personally, seeing if I can find a spot that works for them before I jump into some other stuff.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with any of these teams, obviously. Looking at those numbers, they've been making a lot of people a lot of money.
Let's talk about the action index. What do we got here?
Well, not a lot of change here. Duke, Gonzaga, Virginia, and North Carolina remain in your top four. Michigan State slid a bit to number five after the loss to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee, the number one ranked team in the nation, slots in at 6 here. Okay. Kentucky's on the rise up to number 7.
They are.
Followed by the Michigan Wolverines and Virginia Tech at 9, and the Purdue Boilermakers dropped a spot to 10 this week.
Now, did you do the Va-Tech before last night or after last night?
This was before last night's game. Okay. That's an excellent point, Wags. I think Virginia Tech had a tough loss last night at home to Louisville.
Yep.
And certainly would downgrade them a little bit.
That's right. And then you got Nevada in at 19, so they're just kind of going down.
Yeah, hanging steady. You know, I look at this team as a Sweet 16 team, but mm-hmm. I really don't think that there are any threats to make it to the Final Four.
Yeah, shed a tear. What spots are we looking at this week then?
Well, I think both of us are on Sparty tonight, mm-hmm. minus 10, looking over my shoulder, not looking good. But hopefully Kansas State can come through for us in the late session with that home game at Kansas.
Okay.
Other games we've picked out, first off, is a Wednesday nighter in the ACC, where two teams who like to play slow and lots of defense are Clemson and Georgia Tech. I'm projecting the total at 126. And I'm going to go under this game. Both of them allow under 66 points per game.
Okay.
And Georgia Tech has played 6 straight conference unders. And Clemson is 5-3 to the under in the ACC this season. So I'm going under this one, 126, easy money.
Okay, let's take it. Easy money. The next one is Maryland at Nebraska. This is for tomorrow. Is this a real line?
Yep, this is a real line. Just came out a few hours ago, and probably my favorite pick of the week. I don't think it can get any more locky than Maryland at Nebraska tomorrow night. This team is just on a crazy slide. Mm-hmm. Without Isaac Copeland, they're just a different team. And the offense has dipped, as I noted above. And not only that, but they miss him in the lane on defense, too.
Yep.
Enter Maryland Terrapins with the big man, Bruno Fernando. And you can't forget the freshman sidekick, Jalen Smith. Mm-hmm. On the inside, these two men just make it happen. In the first game, Maryland won 74-72. Mm-hmm. Fernando had 18 points, 17 rebounds. And at Nebraska on Wednesday night, I think he's going to have an even bigger performance. That was with Copeland in the lineup.
Right, exactly. Right.
Maryland is just a rebounding machine, 20th in offensive rebounding, and Nebraska's 296 in defensive rebounding. I'm laying the wood on Maryland tomorrow night. I think they're going to go in and win this game by at least double digits.
Yeah, they're getting one right now, so jump on that if you can, or just go money line. The next game that you like is Houston at Central Florida. Central Florida is getting 4 points because Houston's the top team in the conference. It's a Thursday night game, total 127. Looks like you like the Golden Knights.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit of a contrarian play for me. Houston is kind of the more well-known team. If you remember, they went on that great run to start the season, 15-0 before losing at Temple. And UCF are actually a quiet good team themselves, 16-4 straight up on the season. And they've been favored in every single game this season except for one on the road at Memphis, which they lost. But Houston, I think, has been playing well. They are hot, as you mentioned, 7-3 against the spread in their last 10. But laying points against this UCF team is going to be tough. They've got a 7'6" center, Taco Fall, who controls the paint for them, and they hold their opponents to only 43% on two-pointers. So I think that UCF will be able to play some defense and hold down Houston and get the win and the cover on Thursday night.
I think that we noted before in the pod that this could be a kind of a letdown spot for Houston because they're looking ahead to the big game against Cincinnati at home on Sunday, which we'll talk about later in the head-to-head. So I do like that angle in this. I mean, Taco's the man in the middle, but Houston's a very good team. I don't know. They were kind of my overrated list for a long time, but their metrics get better. They're a really good basketball team, but I can see them letting down and definitely, you know, 4 points is something on the road. Okay, we've talked about Washington. Washington's going to be at Arizona right now. On Thursday, you're grading it as a pick 'em, is that right?
Yeah, based on my numbers, this one should be about a pick 'em.
Okay, and then the total is 131. You know I love Washington. I'll be on that game, but what about this under?
Yeah, I like the under in this game too. Arizona has really struggled to score the ball this year. And as you noted, Washington is 15th in defensive efficiency. I think another big factor in this one is the health of Arizona forward Chase Jeter. The Duke transfer didn't play in the last game, and he's questionable for Thursday night with a back injury. And if he doesn't go, I think that it really hurts Arizona even more. Washington defends the paint exceptionally well, 44% allowed inside on the two-pointers, and they own an 11% block percentage.
Okay.
So without Chase Jeter, I think that they're going to be able to stifle this Arizona offense, and I like it under, and I think your pick of Washington is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Arizona, even before the late, they kind of had a slide lately. They were a good defensive team, but offensively not good. So I definitely like that pick. So we'll save Kentucky and Mississippi State for the head-to-head, right?
Yeah, and just to go back real quick, you mentioned 6-0 ATS, but this Washington team is actually 9-0 ATS in the conference and 9 in a row.
Oh, nice. Well, that's before my tracking, so that's great. I mean, this team is the red hot. So like I said, Kentucky later. We'll talk about Nebraska at Purdue. Purdue are 8-point favorites at home. That's our projection. Total projection at 144. This is for Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You know I'll be riding the Boilers there. Definitely fading Nebraska, but I love the Boilers. We've talked about how they've improved. They've got that freshman big man that's definitely made a difference, and now that Nogel's making his free throws, I mean, this is a win-win.
Yeah, this is a great spot for Purdue. Really tough week for Nebraska. They have to face the physical Maryland team on Wednesday night and then turn around and play a well-rested Purdue squad on Saturday. Purdue hasn't played since last Sunday's game against Minnesota.
Right, they get that weird schedule where they have the big rest.
Nearly a week off, and as you mentioned, this Purdue team is just on a roll right now, and Nebraska playing shorthanded, I think they're going to have a tough time covering this one.
Okay. We'll save Duke and Virginia for the head-to-head, and but we do want to look at Virginia has a tough schedule because on Saturday they host Duke, and then they go to North Carolina on Monday night.
Yeah.
And right now you're projecting North Carolina being a one-point favorite with no total projected yet. So what do you like in that one?
Well, I think I've been looking at this spot for quite a while with Virginia. Brutal with a Saturday night tilt against Duke at home, and then they have to turn around and play Monday at North Carolina.
Right.
North Carolina has a game Saturday as well, mind you, but it is against Miami, Florida, and home, certainly a tough, easier opponent at home. Yep. So I'm going to be taking North Carolina in this game at about a pick 'em, or I'm projecting them to be a one-point favorite. Just a very tough spot for Virginia. And North Carolina has been playing well, too. So.
Oh, they're playing great. They're rising up in the polls and also in KenPom. I mean, they're right there. I just think you're right. When you basically play a Duke squad at home, you know that's going to be a battle regardless of what happens. Maybe they win the game, but then you got to get on the road. It's kind of like that Big 12 thing that we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Those road teams on those Monday night spots, it's a little bit tougher. It's a tough to get up for those games.
Yep. Quick turnaround for that road team every time, no doubt.
Okay, let's talk about the NBA. There's been a lot of action in the NBA because the trade deadline's coming up. First, Porzingis got traded to Dallas for Dennis Smith, DeAndre Jordan, Wesley Matthews, and two future first-round picks for the Mavs. And I guess there's other players involved here. You got Courtney Lee, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Trey Burke. But really, it's putting together Porzingis and
Doncic.
And Doncic. I mean, this is going to be an amazing grouping here for the future. I know that, what's his name?
Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban's got to be frothing at the mouth now. So, big deal. I mean, Dallas isn't very good this year, but look for the future.
Yeah, great move by the Mavericks here. I think it's just a brilliant trade. Obviously, Porzingis still has that injury and is probably not going to be back this season, but they're really setting themselves up for the future, and they're going to be able to clear some cap space too. I think those three other guys,
DeAndre Jordan makes a ton of money,
is going to be waived, and the Mavericks are going to be on the up and up going forward without a doubt. And on the other side, I think the Knicks are probably going to be tanking. So something I'm going to be looking forward to in the next few weeks is those teams that are going to be entering the Tankapalooza Zion Williamson sweepstakes.
Yeah, there's five or six teams. We'll definitely look at that going forward after the All-Star break because, to target those teams, they're going to lose on purpose. They're going to be like benching all their starters. Mm-hmm. The other talk was the brow, Anthony Davis. He's been this quote-unquote finger injury, but everybody's talking about him going to LA or some other packages. I mean, what do you make of all this?
I haven't been following it that closely, but I find it hilarious that he's had this finger injury quite some time. It's clear that they're keeping him out just until the trade deadline to figure out what they're going to do. It sounds like he may be going to LA. He may be going to LA after the season regardless.
Right.
So teams are trying to weigh their options. Do we just rent him for the rest of the season, try to make a run at a championship? Or do we hang on to our pieces? Like Boston, for example, I know has been one team that's in the mix with a ton of young pieces. But either way, I think after the trade deadline this week, the Pelicans are going to be one team that I'm going to be looking to fade because I expect they're going to enter that tank mode.
They'll definitely tank if they get rid of him, for sure. Even if they do, he might just say his finger hurts the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It looks like you did a little bit of analysis on the Pacers, you know, your Pacers without Oladipo. And it's a shame he got really hurt, and now they're 11-6 to the under without him in the lineup.
Yeah, really saddened by the Oladipo injury. He's one of my favorite players in the league, but I think it's a gambling opportunity for us, Wegs.
It is. Why not make money?
11-6 11-6 to the under without Depot. And I think it really has to do with their offensive efficiency taking a hit and the pace being slower without him in the lineup. I went through the box scores and crunched the numbers, and they've actually averaged only 94 possessions per game over the last three.
That's low.
Which was down from their season average of 102 nearly. So under last night against New Orleans, and then I played him on the under again tonight against the Lakers. So something I'm going to keep an eye on going forward.
Well, if he can win a bet, you know, over 60% of the time, I think you should take it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you look down at the bottom here, they're actually 30-22 to the under on the season. So right then and there, it shows you that this is an under team in general.
So to go over that, actions put together the top over and under teams. Boston is the top over team with at 31-22, followed by San Antonio 31-23, Toronto 30-24. Then you've got Houston and Washington at 29-22-1 for those guys. The under teams, not that surprising, with Memphis 34-19-1. Wow, they're an under machine.
I sure
are. LA, that's probably because, you know, the LeBron thing, 33-20. Detroit 28-20-3, our Bulls 32-21, and then your Pacers 30-22. So, look, NBA is tough to bet. We've talked about that, but this under over bet might be a lot better for the totals.
Yeah, I mean, trends aren't something that I normally follow blindly. Let me get out there and say that right away. But it's definitely something I look into after I've done some analysis in each game to try to determine, okay, is this a team that generally goes under? I mean, it kind of gives me that added extra couple of percentage points when I'm making a play on totals.
Well, especially if you see these teams that match up on the under list together, depending on where the total is, I mean, you might say, hey, well, these guys usually go under when they're both going to go under, so hey, let's do it. Okay, and that kind of speaking of the over-unders, let's go into that light touch of the NHL and the first period puck line. The big three on Saturday all went under, though. Tampa, Chicago, and Pittsburgh, they're three of the five that usually go over every week, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Tough losses for action and the other follow the money followers on Saturday, as all three of them stayed under their totals. And the first few games that day all went over in the first period. So I think that was probably due. But there's some other spots coming up, specifically on Thursday night. There's a huge NHL slate. And a couple of the big ones are in action again. Tampa Bay is at home to St. Louis.
Okay.
And I've got the number at close to minus 200. So I'm guessing it's going to come out open a little bit less than that. There may be some value on Tampa Thursday.
Okay.
Also, you've got Vancouver coming here to Chicago down the street. And that total vig, I've got about minus 155. And then lastly, the spot I was looking at was the Columbus Blue Jackets playing on the road late night to Arizona. And that one, the vig should be about minus 162. So those three teams have been going over a lot, and I think there may be some value with them on Thursday night, depending on where it opens.
Okay, I might start dabbling in that since I'm done with the NFL. I got to find something.
Yeah. Yeah, those three good ones tonight, too. Might be a little late for you, but we'll see how they fare and go from there.
That's right. All right, well, let's jump into the head-to-head segment. We got four games, all basketball. We'll start off with Friday night action, which we love Friday night action, right, Action?
Oh, yeah.
The Nuggets are at the Sixers. We're grading this at the Nuggets will be a four-point favorite, given that they beat the Sixers, you know, fairly recently by double digits. What say you on this one, Action?
Well, I'm going to take the Denver Nuggets. This is a team that I've been following all year. It's just a great ball club. Very high scoring team and have been playing very well. They're 4-1 in their last five games straight up, only two covers though, and I think that they match up well with this Philadelphia team even on the road. I think they played them a few weeks back and won by 16 at home, so although there may be some revenge in the air for Embiid and co, I think the Denver Nuggets can pull this one out and win by four.
Okay, well, I'm going to go against you here. The Sixers have been completely inconsistent, which is great for betting. But you know, this is a team that just, you know, a week or so ago beat the Warriors. You know, I mean, at the Warriors, 113-104. So I think that they play up for the big games. The Nuggets should have been a big game when they got beat down. But this will be at home Friday night, be a big, well-televised game. So I think they're going to come to play and at least keep it within that number and probably win the game outright just because this is the Sixers. You can't predict them. So I'll go on that side for you. The next game is going to be Kentucky at Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. This is a big SEC matchup. Kentucky's on the rise. We've got it charted at 3 points. Kentucky be a three-point favorite on the road. And I am going to go with Kentucky. I've been talking them up for a while now. They've hit all the metrics. They're just rising way up in KenPom. I mean, they are already up at, I think they're number 9, at least the last time I checked. And what I love about this team is twofold. This team, unlike a lot of Calipari teams, they came in with a lot of hoopla. And since they fell on their face against Duke, they kind of got, you know, a reality check and had to kind of reassess. They had a lot of transfers and things to kind of mold together. And now this team is in the top 20 and actually, you know, the top 10 in defense and top 20 in offensive efficiency. I just love that about that they're playing both sides of the ball. When you look at Mississippi State, look, they're a good basketball team. They've got Ben Howland. You know, he obviously was great when he was out at UCLA. He knows how to coach. But they've been a little bit too inconsistent for me. I know that they're going to be at home. They did beat Ole Miss this weekend and got revenge in that game. But I don't know if I can trust the team. And, you know, if I'm getting 3 points on the road, I will take that all day with Kentucky.
Okay. Kentucky laying 3. Right?
Yeah, laying 3. Okay. That's what I meant. Yeah.
I like Mississippi State in this game. I think it's a little bit of a contrarian play for me. They're only 4-4 in the conference this season, and they've got a 3-game homestand here with LSU on Wednesday night. This Kentucky game will be the second one, and I think Mississippi in the third or another team. But these games are huge for them.
Yeah,
and
they have to win.
Saturday, I think they're going to get up for this Kentucky team and play really well. They started the season an incredible 12-1 against the spread, and they've only gone 4-6 in their last 10. Although I don't really see any true statistical advantage that the Bulldogs are going to have over Kentucky, I think this is a spot where they can get up behind the home crowd and pull off the upset or even at least cover the 3.
Sure. Okay. The other big game of Saturday is the Duke at Virginia. This is a rematch from when they played at Cameron a couple weeks ago. What do you got in this one, Action?
Well, I have been waiting for this spot all season long, and I'm going to be all over Virginia. They played them toe-to-toe at Cameron. I watched the whole entire game, and they really were in that game from start to finish. They were able to limit Zion's touches on the inside and really shut down Duke's three-point shooting ability. This Virginia team is number one in three-point shooting defense, and that's one of the strengths of this Duke team. So I'm going to be taking Virginia behind the strength of their defense and their much improved offense to win this game and cover that 2-point spread.
Should be another great game. I'm really excited to see it. I would say that the first matchup, Duke actually surprised me how well they played without Trey Jones, their point guard. Trey Jones is back. He's a great defensive player, and he makes that offense get even better. And I think that what they found in the second half against Virginia was that they can figure out ways to isolate R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson against that defense and score. And so, yes, they're going to be on the road, but I just think Duke is going to be better than them in this game, and I don't think it's going to be even that close. I think getting the 2 points is great for me. I think they're going to win the game outright, and I think they're going to beat them, not handily, but they're going to be in control of this game. So it should be a great one, and let's see how it plays out.
Can't wait for it. It's going to be one of the matchups of the season.
That's right. Our last one is in the American Athletic Conference. We alluded to it a little bit. Cincinnati at Houston. Houston, we're projecting as a 4.5-point favorite at home. And I like Houston a lot, but I've been fading them here and there. I'm going to go with the Bearcats, even though they're kind of on my list of potentially overrated teams. I love the way this team plays. They are really hard-nosed. This should be a grudge match. It definitely should be an under game. I don't know what the total is, but it's going to be a really well-played defensive game. And Cincinnati's been one of those teams that's been on top of this conference since it was formed. And they're going to show Houston why that they're always up there. And I'll take the 4.5 points for sure in this game.
All right, good deal. I'd love to take Houston in this spot. really behind their strength of their defense. They're number 12 in the nation in adjusted defensive efficiency, 91 points per 100 possessions. And they're number 2 in defensive field goal percentage at only allowing their opponents 42% from the field. And really not a bad offense either. They average 111 points per 100 possessions. And this team is going to be at home. They're strong rebounding too. Really all the metrics just point to Houston. And the Cincinnati team is not good on offense. So looking at those two contrasting angles, I'm going to be all over Houston and Coach Kelvin Sampson to cover this game.
All right. We'll have to see what happens. Okay, well, that wraps up this episode. We've had it's about the same as normal. Guys talk a lot. We're going to switch schedules again back to Thursday next week, right?
Yep, that's right.
So we'll be back on the Thursday tilt with the college basketball season. And hopefully you'll follow us and tell your friends and win some bets. Action's been putting a ton of action out on Twitter, and he's been winning big time. So I'm going to be doing more of that myself now that I can allocate more resources to my college game.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks really just get into the college basketball season after the Super Bowl. So right. For those of you who are joining us, welcome to college basketball gambling. I love it. It's one of my favorite pastimes, and we're going to be really diving in over the next few weeks and prepping you all for that March Madness week, and then hopefully hitting a little bit more NBA and even maybe some more golf too, see if we can catch some more PGA winners.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to find something to do. So. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Definitely follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me personally at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
All right. Until next week.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.